Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Good evening and welcome to the History of Alchemy podcast. I'm Travis Dow.
And I'm Pete Coleman from the Bohemican podcast.
So today we'll talk about Khalid ibn Yazid. In alchemy, Khalid refers to a historical figure, Khalid ibn Yazid, who died in 704. And he was an Umayyad prince, brother of, I might probably butcher this, sorry guys, it's Muawiyah II, who was briefly caliph. So the Umayyad caliphate stretched all the way from Spain to Persia. So quite the powerful guy. And I want to point out the date 1704, because that's significant. That's much earlier than anybody else we've talked about on the show. Prince Khalid basically lost the chance of inheriting the title, but he took an interest in the study of alchemy when he traveled to Egypt. So he was also a huge book collector, and he was kind of key or really helped facilitate the translations into Arabic of existing literature. If it is indeed all the same person, which is hard to say, it is to this Khalid that in the West it was called Khalid Rex with a C, so instead of KH, or basically, you know, King Khalid. That's what they refer to, is this great Arabic collector of literature and then translating them all from various sources, mostly Greek, into Arabic. So this is an important note because he actually has a reputation because of this, of translating basically all Greek knowledge at the time and kind of collaborating it and putting it into one collection, let's say. So this is a huge step in the road to the kind of Arabic and Persian alchemists that we looked at in previous episodes and will continue to look at.
So there's no real agreement whether the books attributed to him were actually his own works. So keep that in mind as we go through them tonight. The popular legend has him consulting a Byzantine monk, Marianos. Marianos the Greek, in other words. The Liber de Composition Alchemiae, which was the first alchemical work translated from Arabic into Latin by Robert Chester in 1144, was purportedly an epistle of Marianos to Khalid.
Yeah, and I read that, actually. So I took some notes from that. That's pretty interesting. So I like this, the connection of the different parts that we're talking about here on the show. So from Greek to Arabic, and then also this was the first book from Arabic to Latin. So this is really interesting stuff here. This is kind of bridging the gaps between worlds. So this Byzantine monk was obviously a Christian monk, and he translated stuff from Greek, and there's also a couple of Hebrew texts that seem to make his way into his collection. So I always kind of wondered, you know, okay, how did the Arabs even get their hands on this, and how did this happen? Well, here's one of those puzzle pieces. In fact, Flamel, actually Pseudo-Flamel, as listeners of the show will know, also Arnold of Villanova, who we did a show on, and many others all cited Khalid in their writings. There's an interesting quote that I liked that was kind of relating to the importance of astrology and alchemy, and the quote is this: "Many people make mistakes and fail to completion. As in any experiment, it should be noted the progress of the moon and the sun. We must know the time when the sun enters the sun of Aries, the sign of Leo, or Sagittarius, which we've mentioned before, that because it is from these signs is accomplished the great work." In fact, even Fulcanelli mentions him. Remember that guy?
I do. In regards to the Philosopher's Stone, Travis and I were going to go back and forth. Travis, you're going to be Marinus Romanus, and I'll be the Khalid.
So, yeah, because this was, like in Greek fashion, this was written in the form of a dialogue. So since we got two podcasters here, yeah. So I'll start with Morian. "So this stone is soft to the touch and is softer than is his body, but it is very heavy and is very sweet to the taste, and its nature is air.
It is the smell before it is made, and after it is made?"
"Before it is made, it has a strong smell, and it smells bad, as we know. But after it is done, it has a good smell. What did say the sage? This water removes the smell of the dead body, which has already lost its soul, because the body feels very bad, this state, having an odor such as this of tombs. So it's interesting. I've heard and read many, many things about the Philosopher's Stone. Never its taste. It's a new one to me.
Well, in order to say that, someone probably had to do it.
Which, knowing the process...
Yeah, I wouldn't probably be doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the recipes, as Morianus was describing it to Khalid, it's interesting stuff since it was written as a dialogue, like I mentioned. So basically, Khalid would ask questions about the Philosopher's Stone, and Morianus would answer. Not just the stone, but also the process. So otherwise, really pretty normal alchemical steps, like... it mentions the green dragon in the recipe, black, white, yellow, red, the four colors that we come across all the time. In fact, if you recall our recipe episode, that was you'll get all of that. I'm still considering doing a separate episode on Morianus Romanus because he's actually alchemist behind all this stuff, but they're always mentioned together. So I can never find any sources without the other. So if I do more research on Morianus Romanus, or Morian the monk, it'll basically be in regards to Khalid as well. So it might just be this episode part two. But it's hard stuff to find on him that doesn't relate to Khalid. Like, he's just mentioned in that context. So supposedly, he was a student of Stephanus of Alexandria, and that is someone I'll do a show on. Some notes I took from reading that original, the epistle, basically, and also from a work I read called the Secreta Alchemy, like the Alchemy Secret. This was originally supposedly a Hebrew, then Arabic, then Latin, and now English text, okay? So some of the key notes I kind of took out here was, first of all, as we've heard many times before, nothing happens without God's will. Philosophers have partly hidden the meaning and the way of creating the Philosopher's Stone. It mentions mineral elixir, also animal elixir, also acids, which it calls wash, and also elixir to make gold from mercury, which we're familiar with, and then also the equipment, and also that knowledge of math is necessary, and then the kind of the steps like dissolve, congeal, make white, then red. The rest of the recipe follows. It's interesting that he mentions the fire size, the heat, that it has to be constant, and for how long, and that kind of thing. He quotes Hermes, which I found very interesting. And then less interesting, maybe, is that it has to be in hot horse dung for 40 days, and you're constantly renewing the dung. So it definitely doesn't taste sweet.
Or smell nice.
Part.
Not at all.
Yeah. So kind of interesting is that what kind of a consistent theme throughout these... especially like Arabic and Persian alchemists, is that they don't make any pretense to say you're turning copper into silver. But he says that once you created the stone, there's a 250-to-1 ratio of copper or steel to the Philosopher's Stone, and when you mix them, it will become silver. And it's pretty clear to my modern eyes, at least I think, that you're basically shining it. If it's copper, you're whitening it to a degree. You're creating an alloy in some ways that just makes it look clean, shiny, like silver. I'm not sure they're actually saying that they're creating silver. It just seems like that they're saying, okay, here's how you make something appear like silver. And then for gold, it was basically the same thing, but you bury the stone in dung and water for 4 days, which kind of yellows it, which is kind of gross, by the way.
What would give the appearance of gold? I mean, that's the key in this situation.
Yeah, and I wonder, are they implying that it really turns to gold? Because I didn't get that impression from reading the recipe at all. It seems like
maybe
no,
not
we're making
here,
it...
but in previous alchemy, yes, yeah, absolutely. The idea was transmutation. You're literally taking something from one source to another.
That's,
here, maybe it's just alluded to.
The theme that I come across in Western, like European alchemy, is like you're actually transmuting something. And in Arabic or Persian alchemy, it's more like, no, here's how you make something appear like it for decorative sake or for medicinal sake. They would say that the medicinal properties would be the same as real silver and gold, but cheaper. So, okay. Anyways, that's probably the most interesting things I've found on these guys. So I don't want to bore you with any other peripheral details. So yeah, short and sweet.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
All right. Thank you very much for listening.
Take care.
You've been listening to the History of Alchemy podcast with Travis Dow and Pete Coleman. For more information about this episode, and other information about alchemy, alchemists, and related subjects, visit historyofalchemy.com. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, review, and don't forget to rate us. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments, ideas, and corrections to podcast@historyofalchemy.com or get in touch via Facebook on the History of Alchemy podcast page or Twitter @AlchemyPodcast. Tune in to our sister podcast all about the Czech Republic, Bohemicon, which is also available on iTunes or on Bohemicon.com. Until next time on the History of Alchemy podcast, thank you for listening.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.